So my holiday drama actually occurred in India, in Mumbai, which used to be called Bombay when I lived there. That's where I grew up. And we actually lived in one room of a large apartment, which we shared with three other families. And we actually had a kitchen that we shared with the landlord. And this is important for the story, but they were all Muslim and we were Hindu. So since we were in this one cramped apartment, we were pretty close. My parents and I, I'm an only child. And when I was 20, I actually left India to come to the U.S. My parents, of course, they were, you know, kind of devastated, and it was difficult for them. But for me, it was a big change. I was in grad school, and then I graduated, and I came to UMBC, and, you know, I got an apartment, and I had my own kitchen instead of sharing it with these people. And so I could cook, and I started becoming a little bit of a foodie. I was experimenting with different Chinese food and Thai food and things like that. And what I did was, anytime I had money, I would actually go back, usually around December or so, just to pay my parents a visit. And what I would do is I would cook a big holiday meal. And this was sort of between December and January. And these meals got pretty popular to the extent that my mother, who was a school teacher, she used to bring some of her friends over, her school teacher friends, and you know, all my relatives would come as well. And remember, I did all this cooking, and I would sort of keep the spiciest things, I would save them for them. Because being from India, you know how we love spices. You know, the hotter the better. And so I took home things like sambal oelek. Does anyone know what that is?
Yes.
It's an Indonesian spicy paste. Or I would take back Thai green curry and things like that. Now, this was still when Bombay, Mumbai, wasn't a big international city like it is now. So people didn't really know about Thai food and some of the other things I brought back. So these were real novelties. I remember hot and sour soup and things like that. And this continued for several years until about 1988. And by then I was about, I think I was 29 then. And that's the year that I went to France, to Paris, for about 7 months on a sort of sabbatical. And I got an apartment there, and, you know, I started experimenting with French food. I started figuring out what's the difference between Burgundy and Bordeaux, and, you know, Brie and Chartreuse, and all these different experiences. It was supposed to be a research sabbatical, but I think the only research I really did was in the food department. Some days I didn't go in at all. I would just go to the market and just shop. And then, you know, in the evening I would call my friends over and they would help me eat the stuff. And I started sort of thinking of myself as more of a world citizen. Okay, here I am, you know, this guy from this little place in Mumbai, a single room, and now suddenly I have my own apartment in Paris. So I was making this big transition. And I started thinking, right at the end of my stay, there was a movie called Babette's Feast. Some of you might have seen that. And in this movie, this village woman gets this enormous fortune. And she decides to spend it all on her fellow villagers and cook this wonderful meal for them. Show them what, you know, real cuisine can be like. And I started thinking, wouldn't it be nice if I did the same thing for my family back in India? We saw like Babette does Bombay or something. So I said, you know, because over there they're so used to this spicy food. Well, what if I actually showed them what French cuisine was like? You know, there's something beyond spice. So on the way to India, I was at the airport and I actually bought some cheese. And throughout on the plane, I started trying to think what I'm going to do for this meal. And, you know, once I got there, I went to the market myself, and you know, I was used to the nice French markets on Boulevard Raspail, and here I was with my basket and my Nikes trying to negotiate this muddy place in Bombay, and all the people there sort of knew, hey, he's from outside, let's get him. And so, you know, I tried to buy stuff and all, and I didn't know what they were selling me, but I got it. So the meal started, and my father was already kind of old. He had arthritis in both knees, and he could hardly get out of bed. I brought the cheese out. I bought this wonderful camembert. And my mother took one look at it and she said, you know, that smells even worse than it looks. So my father, on the other hand, you know, I cut these crafty little triangular wedges, and he was used to the laughing cow wedges. So he took a piece and just started chewing on it. And his eyes just flew open. And, you know, this poor man who could hardly walk, he leapt out of bed and went running to the bathroom to spit this stuff out. And, you know, he was furiously gargling over there and everything. And, you know, none of the other guests would touch this stuff. So I thought, okay, time for the bouillabaisse. Okay, let's tell them what this soup is like. And I said, you know, concentrate on the pure feel of this fish fumet. Forget about spices and all. Just concentrate on this pure, clean taste. And what did my cousin say? She said, do you still have that chili paste from last year? She went into the fridge, found the sambal oleg, and to my horror, started putting dollops of it into the soup. And then someone else found the green curry paste and put that inside. And I said, okay, it's time for the next course. So the next course was a kind of cauliflower and pasta dish. And this was for my aunt, who's a vegetarian. So I served it, and she picks up the noodle, the first noodle, and she looks at it, and she says, look at those flecks of yellow. Is there egg yolk in this? And, you know, she's a vegetarian. She doesn't eat eggs. So she actually made me go out to the communal dustbin, and I have to actually fish out the wrapper from it for the noodles. And I found that, yes, there was egg in it. So she wouldn't eat it. And so luckily I had some packets of Lipton onion soup mix. So she was actually quite happy with that. Okay, so it was time now for my pièce de résistance. And that was going to be my coq au vin. You know, the chicken with wine that is a classic French dish. And I was earlier in the day, I was making it, and, you know, towards the end, or a little before that, my mother said, you know what, our landlord is Muslim. Maybe it's not such a good idea to add all that wine and have all those alcoholic vapors kind of fill this kitchen, because they don't actually drink alcohol, so it's forbidden. So I said, okay, fine. So I brought the chicken back to my room, to our room, and added the wine sort of at the end, which was kind of a little weird, but I said, okay, hey, what the heck. Now remember, I'd gone shopping myself, so the chicken that these people had sold me, I don't know what it was, but after 3 hours of cooking, even the liver wasn't tender. I mean, this thing was tough like anything. So we were standing around this pot of chicken with this raw wine in it and, you know, everything in it. And people were gingerly dipping their bread into it and tasting it and saying, so is this the curry that the French are so proud of? And I was trying to figure out what to do, and suddenly my mother said, you know, I've made some chickpeas just in case something didn't go right. And so everyone just made a stampede to the refrigerator. And the chickpeas were brought out, and they were finished in a second, and then my aunt, who was still ravenous, found the dal, and she scraped that clean, and pretty much that was the end of that meal. So afterwards, I started thinking, okay, what's going on here? And I started realizing that maybe my family was actually trying to give me a message, perhaps. And they'd given me this message a few times before as well. For instance, you know, I brought them this wonderful chef's knife, and they'd said, oh my God, this is going to just chop our fingers off. And they'd gone back to using this blunt little thing that they'd been using ever since I was growing up. And, you know, the knife was put in the drawer. And then the carrot scraper, the carrot peeler that I had, they complained, hey, this is just taking away half the carrot with it. So again, they would use a knife to scrape off the covering of the carrot. And, you know, the calphalon was too heavy and so on and so forth. So, and putting all this together, what they were really telling me was, hey, they're pretty satisfied with the way things are. Okay, they love me, and they're going to accept all my spices and everything. But, you know, the international world cuisine and everything, maybe they don't need that. Maybe they don't need me to impress them. And so that's the message I took away. But actually, as it turned out, the holidays did go well. because I did try making that same dish a little later in the visit. And this time, I took a quarter cup of sambal oleh and mixed it in.